Now, all right. Can't believe it. Can't believe it.
Back. We're back.
We are alive, man. We are alive. Here is a 270 degree view of East Boston from East Boston waterfront. You can see Boston. I just ended up being exiled outside today, but would love to chat a little bit, and we're back.
Yep, that's it, man. After a brief hiatus, you know, for anybody that's watching, we had a couple of things that we needed to get in order. We are, you know, as committed as ever, certainly, but just needed to keep the house and home clean and tidy. We've done that, and so now we're back to continue to talk about the emergence of this amazing technology and different opportunities that are out there and that exist. Real quickly before we hop into this, we've got today we're going to talk
about.
We're
still reeling Ryan in because out fishing.
That's right. But Ryan,
he'll be here next time. Yeah.
Ryan's OOO here for a bit, but he'll be back. He'll be back next week. So. We've got a couple of topics that we're gonna address on this episode. One is gonna be just a brief chat about validator rates how to think about that. And I think Georgi, maybe you know something that might be helpful is just to kind of explain you know how we're talking about or why we're talking about these the commission rates for validators. It's probably worth kind of setting it up more generally. But then the second thing that we're going to briefly discuss is just a bit about the macro conditions that we're all going through. There's a lot of noise. There's some signal, and frankly, some of the sources that we follow have started to their narratives have kind of started to play out. So that's probably worth sharing.
Yep.
Before we hop into this, do remember that everything on this channel. Is meant to be taken for entertainment and educational purposes only. That's it. Nothing else.
That's right.
So
yeah, no financial advice.
No financial advice. Yes, sir. So Georgi, do you want to key us up on the commission conversation with validators and maybe how that conversation came to be? More specific. What it is specifically, like what commission, you know, what validator commissions are generically, and then specifically maybe drilling into the new Luna chain and the conversation that's been hot in the on the new Luna chain about validator commissions.
Right. Well, we weren't gone. Yes, we didn't put out much video content. But we were very active on Twitter, and we, as the audience may know, ran a Terra Classic Now validator, and then ended up running a Terra 2.0 validator. Both of them are active and running, and so we got very much involved in the launch of Terra 2.0. A lot of the governance discussions, we're also very closely watching and participating to our best ability with the discussions on Terra Classic, some burn rate proposals, proposals for revival, new projects on Terra Classic. So we are running both validators. Granted, the Terra Classic one is pretty much at break even. Some months it's it's a little bit of a loss, but we are supporting the ecosystem. So from that perspective, the minimum commission and the idea of just that discussion are very close to us. And why it matters is because we saw a lot of the zero commission sort of games or wars, if you will, on Terra 1. And they're popular amongst the validator communities where we see a validator running at zero commission, meaning they take no profit. They just operate the validator. And whoever stakes on that validator receives the maximum rewards. Usually validators stake a very small percentage. Usually it's 3% or 5%. 10% probably is on the higher end. Some validators run higher, but 0% basically means that the validators make no money. So that prompted a discussion on Terra 2.0. Should we set the necessary minimum commission to avoid these 0% wars? Which means that when you have some validators setting commission zero, it could make the validator very attractive to stakers, right? So you want to stake somewhere where you make the full 100% instead of, let's say, 97% or 98% of your rewards. So from that perspective, we saw in Terra 1 that when you have 0%, you could get a lot of concentration of staking, and it just kind of skews the distribution and makes the validator set centralized in a way. It could give a lot of voting power. So let's talk about that, right?
Well,
the setting, that's the context, basically.
Well, and one other thing I'll add, right, is that we've seen this 0%, this 0% strategy be abused recently, where you'll have a few validators that are, you know, that are advertising 0% commission. They'll get just a massive, you know, number of people in and kind of locked in, and then they'll raise the commission. Sometimes, you know, gratuitously, right? Sometimes it's, you know, I mean, what was the one that we saw go from 0% to 20%?
King Super, I think, was the validator.
King Super. So,
and, you know, they had a maximum daily change rate, which is another parameters that we set when we create our validators. We always stay at 1%, which means we can't jump our rate too much. Others set it at 5, 10, 20. In King Super case was 20, so they could jump. I think they jumped to 10 and then 20 in the matter of 2 days or something. As you said, they've locked people. Redelegation takes 21 days. So a lot of people were upset because, you know, that was done without warning, without any transparency. And, you know, they felt like they were misled.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that. The kind of larger discussion, and I'm going to hand this right back to you because you were on a roll there. But the kind of larger discussion is that, you know, the idea of what businesses that run validators, how they return value to the shareholders of these validators, is still kind of up in the air, right? Like, we see some people that are, you know, issuing privileged access to certain, you know, data for certain data sets and things like that. You see newsletters, you know, you see additional services that are, you know, doled out to the people in these validators. But still, the business model, like what this means at scale, like in order for proof of stake to work at scale, this has got to get figured out, and it's got to work well. And so when you have a situation where validators are, you know, undermining the trust that's being put in them, or being, nefarious actors in these ecosystems, it's just generally not good for the ecosystem. And so all that is to say is that the two proposals that Georgi is going to talk about here a little bit, you know, we're seeking to set floor commissions so that, you know, so that they could eliminate the incentive to rug pull on that commission.
If you want
to talk a little bit maybe about the two proposals that came through.
And I just want to say, when you first look at it, it looks very simple, but it's actually much, much more nuanced than we thought. And I'll explain why. You know, a lot of these validators did not see themselves as misleading. They just saw themselves as competitive. Others see themselves as, oh, I just want to give back to the community. So it's a much more nuanced picture here. And the discussion of a fixed minimum commission came from evaluating the monthly costs to run a validator, which could be 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. Some people say 1,000, depends on where you're at in the world and what kind of infrastructure you use. But if you use premium infrastructure, 2,000 to 3,000 is about a reasonable range, maybe even more. And then the cost of the asset that you get paid rewards in, like Luna, and then the commission rate. So when you look at all of those things, there was a proposal that calculated that Luna 2.0 at $2 with infrastructure costs around 3,000 a month or 3,500, you need about 10%, 5 to 10% commission in order to pay for that infrastructure. And there was a lot of discussion, is that accurate? But it doesn't matter, but you do need a non-zero income to pay. Somebody has to pay for that infrastructure. So the proposal for 10% was struck down, and we also voted no. We thought it was excessive, and also absolute fixed commission is probably not the best solution. And then there was a follow-up proposal for 5%, which is the mode or the most frequently used commission right now in Terra 2.0 and other blockchains. And that one looks like it's also not going to pass. There's a lot of opinions against it. The tricky thing is that commissions should be a function of the cost, right? The infrastructure cost, the value of the asset, but also there is also the minimum threshold that you need in order to get into the active set. So here's how you can see the zero commission play. You can see it, forget nefarious, right? Let's just assume most validators that we've worked with, even the ones that appear to be jumping high, did not appear to be doing it to screw people over. They all know this is a long game. So let's assume good intentions, even if they're a little misguided, right? Let's just assume that, okay? So the 0%, what do you gain as a validator? You gain voting power, but then you are investing your own money into the blockchain. So you might say, all right, well, I'm giving money to the blockchain. But that's not correct. If you get a lot of voting power, this is the trade-off. You're not giving money. There are ways to give money to the blockchain. You can, contribute to the community fund. This is not giving. There is an exchange of value here. You are putting money into the infrastructure, putting 0% commission, but then you're getting voting power. So that must be valuable. What the problem with that is that it creates an additional selection, an additional filter or barrier that basically precludes other validators to validate and to enter into the active set. What do I mean by that? You not only have to be able to run and have the skills and have the community support, but you also initially, in order to get into the active set, will have to pay money, invest into that infrastructure, or run basically without any income. So that means that validators who want to enter into the active set or stay into the active set for that matter should be able to lower the commission. Like in our case, we should be able to lower and lower and lower and lower the commission in order to stay competitive. And that forces certain validators or prevents certain validators who may have the skills, may have great abilities to contribute. So from that perspective, I think there should be some kind of minimum commission that's a function of that threshold and the values and the costs for the infrastructure. But it's very hard to pinpoint what it is exactly. And I've seen a lot of discussion. It's just the net result that we see is that with these zero commissions, is that basically they centralize voting power, which is exactly what we don't want, right? And we saw just one quick example. I think it was Thorchain. If I get it wrong, I apologize. There are other examples of blockchains on Cosmos that have a fixed commission. Everybody is at 10% or everybody is at 5%. You can vary. So they also tend to distribute or redistribute or rebalance the voting power periodically. So to me, that looks like a much better way of distributing voting power, making things distributed or more decentralized, versus allowing, okay, well, it's free, open market, everybody can set whatever percentage they want. And I agree with that open voice, but the end result is you end up with a very concentrated voting power.
Yeah.
So, what do you, just hearing that, right, and reading all the tweets and all the Discord discussions, do you get a sense, like, I feel it's very nuanced. I don't see a very clear, simple solution. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think that, you know, like, we shouldn't forget that proof of stake is still very new. Very, very new.
Yeah.
And understanding, you know, I mean, the entire industry is only 13 years old, right?
So,
you know, you're looking at, and, you know, recently we saw proof of work come under fire, you know, from folks that were interested in applying this ESG lens to, you know, the network and the way that the staking works on a proof of work network. Proof of stake is dramatically different in that it's still just people making these decisions. It's just the infrastructure is a little bit different in the way that people are, you know, voting. But I mean, like, truly, like a shareholder meeting for a company that's listed on the S&P 500 is still a proof of stake type situation, right?
So,
you know, all that is to say is that I think that it's extremely nuanced, but I think that, you know, if chains are to give themselves a shot, they've got to make sure that the ecosystem stays alive long enough to figure out what the, you know, optimized version of this this consensus mechanism is. And I think that, like, that's pretty hard to do when you say, okay, everything's on the table, right? You can go to zero, you can go to 20, you can do whatever you want.
And you see some that I have 100%, they stake their own tokens and they just say 100% commission, which is insane, but
yeah,
you know, people do it.
But
yeah.
Well, and so I think that, and look, if you're a whale in any given ecosystem, like, that's your prerogative, you can totally do that. But I think that, like, really, really what we need are just resilient ecosystems where, you know, builders can come in and experiment with product, build product, try to get users. So I guess what I'm saying is builders and users have a trustworthy and resilient network that they can interact on, right? And so, you know, validator wars really don't do anybody any good. I mean, it's like, what kind of makes sense to me is, like, make sure that the incentive is aligned for validators to use the top, you know, the top, for validators to, you know, use the top environments to run their validators, for them to, you know, for validators to be consistent, for validators to, you know, reinforced chain persistence. But it makes sense to me for there to be a delayed gratification for validators, right? And I say this because validators must be in it for the long run, and anything that, you know, chisels that away and redirects that that focus or that that, you know, interest and payout for immediacy becomes very problematic to the overall ecosystem, because now we're not just talking about how profitably can you run a validator, we're talking about, you know, the resilience, the persistence of the ecosystem being lessened. And I think that to me is why it's so nuanced, right? Is that you gotta have an ecosystem that's running to even give the chain a chance, you know?
Yeah, and the maximum daily percent change is one way. Another way could be if you jump too high, maybe the rewards are unlocked over a period of time instead of immediately. Another way that we saw, as I said, was the fixed rate. Also, there was a fixed maximum. So basically, validators would receive some initial founders incentives. We saw that with Terra 2.0 and Kujira, for being in the active set, being sort of OGs, being there to write the Genesis block. So the selected active validators, like we saw it being very competitive with Kujira and Terra at the launching of the two L1s recently. I think that there was a rule, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I'm just gonna quote an example where if you set your maximum commission more than, let's say, 30%, maximum allowable, you don't get the incentives, right? So there's something like that where there are attempts to refine this process and make it a little bit more acceptable, more reasonable. Just with the minimum commission, what we're seeing in the end is this centralization of voting power. So whatever we do, we may need to experiment, as you said, in a healthy way, right? No, nothing too crazy, but we need to arrive at the place where the voting power flattens out rather than what we're seeing. It starts flat and then it gradually, which is normal, like it's a little bit of a popularity contest. Validators who have these additional roles in the community and contribute deserve to have the attention and to have somewhat more power. But when we see 30, 40, 50% concentrated in like one or two validators, that's where it's starting to be detrimental to the just the growth and the health of the ecosystem.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree.
Thanks for these perspectives, man. I'm thinking maybe we should move to this topic. We'll revisit the commission when Ryan's back next week, so we can get his input as well. But just the DOG voted no to both propositions for the fixed minimum commission. 5% was closer to the target or to something that would work and that is the choice right now. But probably a dynamic minimum commission with, as a function of the threshold to get into the active set, the value of the asset, and the infrastructure costs is probably where the optimal solution is.
I agree. Well, any other closing thoughts before we wrap here?
I think, do you want to revisit the second topic? I don't know if we have space. Maybe we used up the entire space for this. Let me know.
Yeah, I think let's address the macro next week with Ryan. There are a couple of data points that we're following pretty closely. Everybody's kind of on pins and needles with the farmer protests that are happening in the Netherlands. It kind of seems to be a sign of things to come, but we'll see. And we'll talk a little bit more about that next week.
I mean, we will definitely address, and you have seen, the audience has seen from our Twitter, how closely we're following the cascading liquidations even within crypto. I mean, before we even look at the macro world beyond crypto, just within crypto, and basically the fall of lending. That's probably not going to exist. Centralized lending platforms have all failed for having poor business decision practices and maybe even questionable things like lending without collateral or stuff like that. So that's definitely a topic that we owe the audience, but we also have been actively tweeting and posting about it and analyzing it.
Yeah.
So this is top of mind. And then also the global macro moves that you've been following that I think will greatly influence how far we stay in this bear market and how low we go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, man, I actually think those two things are very, very, very related, right? Because I think people are bracing, like I'll glaze over this, you know, and then we'll get into it next week. But I think
preview of coming attractions. Yeah.
Yeah. Give but I think taste. That I think Give these this type of market activity can occur in one of two ways. Either A, you know, truly the fundamentals line up to kind of force, these collateral calls, right? Someone somewhere has to say, I'm uncomfortable with this. I need to sell what I have and get out. And when that starts happening, that's when you have the capital calls that makes the house of cards collapse. And what I'm saying is, you know, to the extent that crypto markets and traditional markets are still linked, which I think they absolutely are, when you see the, you know, these cascading liquidations happen, I mean, it's just, it's more complicated than just, you know, the crypto ecosystem. So we'll tie all that together next week. But yeah, Georgi, thank you so much for your time. Great to connect today, man.
Likewise, man. Awesome. See you soon.
All right.